chickens in the houses, they got chickens in the trees, chicken in the pots, the motto of the Petaloomies. Out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Now Marvin got me started, sold me my first hen. Now I got 4 and 20 and 24 more again. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Chicken in the morning, it's chicken in the night. Weren't for chicken, Petaluma never would have reached its height. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay?
Good evening, or maybe I should say good afternoon. It's still so bright out. It's Mouthful, Smart Talk About Food, Wine, and Farming. Michelle Anna Jordan live in the studio. I was not here last week. Suddenly very under the weather and took a day out of a day off from life, we shall say. And thanks to everyone who took care of it. And the program we aired instead, the archive, was about tasting absinthe. And I like to think that maybe I was just like intuitively prescient, because absinthe, of course, although you can find it a licorice-flavored liqueur base from all parts of the Mediterranean. Absinthe is the one from France. Though you see it in Spain, you see it in Switzerland, but it's the French who invented l'heure verte, the green hour, which is all about the green fairy, which is all about absinthe, and who also had the extraordinary poster art movement in the late 1800s and early 1900s, really extraordinary art, and it was all just advertisements for absinthe. So we're going to do a little bit about that in just a couple of minutes before I introduce our guest. But in the short run, I just wanted to say congratulations and vive la France. Emmanuel Macron, in case you haven't heard, won the French election for president. He's 39 years old. His wife, Brigitte Macron, who is a teacher of literature, high school teacher of literature, they met when she was his high school teacher. They have been together since I think he was 18, and a little bit before, but his parents sent him to Paris to get him away from his teacher. They've been together ever since. She will be the First Lady of France. She is 64 years old, and you know what? Wasn't even a scandal in France. They shrugged. Yeah, whatever. That's how the French are about personal relationships, and that's one of the reasons I love them. And they just rejected the fascist party, Front National. So congratulations, it is safe to visit France, and I was worried about that. I've had a long time connection with France, and I've been teaching a class out at Oly. There are a number of people, and I've been teaching a class for Oly at Oakmont. And there are a number of people in the class who have various connections with France and who travel there frequently, some involved in French courses, French classes. And they inspired me to dig out a huge box of brochures that I have from 22 years ago. It is, I had an organization called Sonoma Provence Exchange, which I've mentioned a few times. And at one point, we got a grant from the Board of Supervisors, one of those bed tax grants. And we celebrated a sisterhood we had formed with two departments, as they're called, as counties are called in France, in Provence. And we created and printed a brochure about Sonoma County, all in French. And for various reasons, the organization, the money, we lost our money in a weird accounting thing. And by the time we got some of our money back, it was too late. So the organization is no longer operative. But I have a couple thousand of these wonderful stories about Sonoma County in French. You can send me an email if you want one. And you know how to reach me, Michelle at MichelleAnnaJordan.com. So anyway, let me say it one more time. Vive la France. And congratulations. It is a great day. I bet there are parties in the street. And now, resonating with last week's show, I've decided just to do a little spontaneous absinthe tasting here in the studio for a couple of different reasons. Have a very beautiful absinthe. It is not on the market yet. It is not bonded yet. There is an opportunity that at some point it may be, but it is one that I have tried on several occasions. And my guest this evening is Paula Downing. I like to think of her as Farmers Market Manager Emeritus. And we were talking this morning, and she has never tasted absinthe, and so I decided, Paula, it was high time. So these are absinthe
Who
glasses.
Who knows what you're going to get?
It's very, very good.
No, I meant once we've been drinking.
Once we've been drinking, that's right. Well, you know, I think you become very articulate. So we're going to pour a little bit of absinthe. It pours rather silently. And I have glasses from Pernod, and they are the glasses. They have lines on them. And the first line, the bottom line, is where you pour the absinthe. It's just about half a shot, I think. Maybe a full shot. I don't think so. Gosh, I'm feeling like Rachel Maddow and her cocktail moment at the end of some of her shows. And part of the other reason that I'm inspired to do this is absinthe is pretty prevalent in New Orleans, and I had some a couple of times, and there is a store in the French Quarter on Royal Street that sells absinthe fountains. That they're not the antique ones that you pay quite a bit for, but they're imitations, and you can get them to serve two people, four people, and eight people. And they're also a variety of really beautiful absinthe spoons. So that's my next goal, is to save some money for my next trip to New Orleans. So an absinthe spoon is a flat spoon, and it has a number of holes in it. And I've seen them shaped like the Eiffel Tower, like the Golden Gate Bridge, all different kinds of things. This just has a pattern of holes. And what it's used for is you put the sugar cube that you are going to stir into the absinthe. You put the sugar cube on the flat spoon after you set the spoon on the glass, and then you trickle the water over it. And if you're very, very lucky, and if you have the right kind of glass and a good imagination, you might, as the water hits the absinthe, you might see the green fairy unfold. I have seen it once. Here we go. We are pouring the water on to, if you listen, you should be able to hear it. And you pour it up to the second line in the glass, which leaves for people like Paula, and to be honest, like me, even though it's not traditional, you can stir in a little bit of ice. So there is Paula's absinthe cocktail. We're just going to get this good type of sugar cube that doesn't dissolve so quickly. We're going to get that in and pass it on to Paula so she can add her ice.
Thank you.
And then we're going to do one more and see if we can hear that water going over it. Okay. And then we will get.
Is it made from? So it smells like licorice. Is it? What is it made from?
Well, it's made from something like up to 70 different herbs.
Really?
And the active ingredient is wormwood.
Wormwood?
Wormwood. Really? And the active ingredient in wormwood is called chuhon. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the molecular structure, it's one hydrogen bond different than THC. So, and it has certain elements of a cannabis high, though without the, doesn't have a strong psychological element. Mm-hmm. It's more of a physical element. And if you look at the art that was generated in support of absinthe, you see an intensification of the yellow and green spectrum. Mm-hmm. And that actually, when you drink absinthe, that will that color spectrum will actually be intensified. Mm-hmm. And there's a bit, there's a heightened sensuality on your skin. Mm. Where if you have, say, over 3 hours, if you have three absinthe cocktails, you'll notice the sensation that's a little bit like having velvet right under your skin.
I just watched King of Hearts again. Remember King of Hearts?
Oh, gosh, I haven't seen that in ages.
It stood up, too. It's still as good as it was 40 years ago. But you remind me of that, and I wonder if they were drinking absinthe on the set. They had a good time.
Now I have to watch it. The main thing I remember it being fun, but I don't remember anything else.
It totally stood up. I laughed and cried all the way through it.
Oh, great. I have been speaking of watching things, I watched at 3 in the morning, if I can't sleep, I will watch Netflix. And I'll typically look for a nature video from the BBC that has David Attenborough narrating. Because I find his voice
amazing, yeah.
And I find his voice so soothing. But I've watched everything at least three times, and I found one called Wings of Life, and I'd never heard of Disney Nature, which they made one word, which I find grammatically totally annoying. But it was, I don't want to say too much, but it was narrated by a woman. I realized it's the first nature show I've ever heard narrated by a woman, which I found pretty astonishing. Yeah. But it's all about flowers, but it's about what flowers do for the earth. Mm-hmm. And the cinematography is some of the most astonishing, gorgeous cinematography I have ever seen in my life. Mm-hmm. Really, Wings of Life, I highly recommend it. Mm-hmm. And on that note, welcome, Paula.
Hi, Michelle.
You are working at the farmer's market again. You were there today.
I was working for Cliff from Ma and Pa. And selling tomato plants. You know, he's 85, and people mob him for his tomato plants, which are, of course, the most fabulous tomato plants on the planet.
I got an email offering me some tomatoes from a garden in August, and he said, we get our plant. Joy Silva has done our seedlings.
Yeah.
So, yeah, people come from all over the Bay Area to get his tomato seedlings.
Well, one of the interesting things, she's the farmer. Joy Silva's the farmer, and Cliff is a salesman. Well, he farms too, of course, but she's the woman who takes care of the plants. And she was an Ohio farmer, and her family were farmers also from Ohio. And they planted religiously by the moon. And she plants religiously by the moon. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that has anything to do with it.
Oh, I think it has a lot to do with it.
Yeah, they're amazing plants, though.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got... You can't kill them, even if you're really terrible. I don't think you can. I've never heard anybody say they killed them.
Well, we'll talk.
Oh, you can.
I have a weird footprint. Mm-hmm. I have a really weird footprint, my property. Mm-hmm. And when it gets sun and when it doesn't get sun. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I don't like to go outside when it's hot. So
sane person wants to be out there when it's hot.
His tomato plants are truly astonishing. And soon... he'll start having his summer produce as
right,
well.
Right, yeah. And but right now it's tomato time. I haven't put him in yet. One of the things that sticks in my mind is that he told me like 25 years ago was that we could get a frost as of May 15th could be our last frost. So I've always kind of kept that in my mind as the after that date, because I'm lazy, and if it dies, I don't know if I'll plant another one. So I wait till after May 15th.
I think that's a good idea.
Yeah.
The farmer's market today was pretty abundant. We had first local Sebastopol cucumbers, summer squash, There were cherries from Winters and a couple of other places. So things are really in full
swing. It was a long, hard winter. There is no farmer walking around Sonoma County who isn't going, am I ever going to stop drowning? But they're starting to now emerge, and everybody's grateful because it was a long, hard winter.
Well, you know, Green String Farm closed for this season.
He did?
Yeah.
I didn't know.
They're pretty low.
You know, they're very low, and they have adobe soil.
Yeah. So they had just too much rain for them.
Really?
And then Oak Hill Farm opened, as they planned on opening, a week ago.
Yeah.
And their elevation is a little bit higher.
Yeah.
But still, things are slower. And then tomorrow I'm going to talk to Paul from Paul's Produce over in Sonoma Valley, because he's pretty low as well.
Yeah.
And then I spoke this morning with George Macros of Earthworker Farm. And his land is pretty high, but he worked all winter, and he said, you know, we had to work in the rain, and that was hard.
Yeah.
But boy, his salad mixes just look glorious right now.
Oh, boy. There is none like it.
There's nothing like it. Yeah, I served it. I did the dinner for Farm Trails 2 or 3 weeks ago, and for the course before dessert, I did the beautiful gem plates from the ceramic plates, hand painted by Aletha Soule. I'm almost glad she's quit doing them, because I couldn't resist them. But so I just did those plates piled high with only his salad mix, which was picked. He picked it at 4:30, and we served it that evening at about 8 o'clock. And it was just, it has loft.
Yeah.
And color. It's just so beautiful
it's
and so
vibrant.
Delicious.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of my theories about farmers is you get in the food, small farmers who do most of their own work, you get in the food who they are. Mm-hmm. You know, and I remember, I thought of that. We had a Mexican guy whose name escapes me right now, but he was so beautiful. And his food was just, had all that love that he was. And that's how I kind of said, his food is him. And George's food is him.
Yes.
I mean, it's vibrant and alive and particular. How he is. It's everything he is. So it's just something that you learn when you get to know farmers.
And you're talking about what I wanted to talk about in the second half of the show. So we can, one of the things is, you more than anyone I have ever met in my life understand farmers.
You do. Because I have questions on all of them. I don't know.
But it has to be more than that. You were one of the first people to come along and say, I'm not asking farmers for donations for events. Farmers need to earn a living. At that point, especially through the 80s and 90s, is, you know, the self-consciousness of who we are. Mm-hmm. So farming community, farmers were just like chefs, were getting asked constantly to donate for free.
Right. Musicians too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Musicians too.
Yeah.
And writers as well. Not as often, because that's not a public thing, but writers as well. But you were one of the first people who came along and said, no, we're paying farmers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it just seemed... I mean, I come from working class, blue collar. You get paid when you work, you know. And I always feel like, okay, the farmers work; they should get paid.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think you really elevated the status of and recognition of that in a really great way.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure.
And they're grateful too.
I bet.
You know, I mean, $50 here and there makes a difference.
Huge. It makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
And, you know, some will sometimes volunteer. Say, well, it's that event, I'm going to give it to you, or I will give you a discount.
Right.
But that
right.
puts them in charge.
Right. If they volunteer that, I always take it, you know. But I don't ask them. I let them tell me.
Uh-huh. So I initially asked you on because you're involved heavily with Slow Food Russian River, and there's some events coming up.
Okay, Slow Food has been, we're busy this year. Some years we're not so busy, but this year we're pretty busy. And we just had a refugee, an event to raise money for refugees, especially from the Middle East.
How did that go?
It went really well.
And
we raised, I think, $8,000.
Where did it take place?
At the Laguna Foundation, Heron Hall.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, it's really interesting. You know, I read something that it kind of exploded in my mind, but I just read in The Nation an article by a woman who was writing about a Jewish woman who it took her years to get here. She and her family knew things were going to go wrong before 1939, and they tried to get out, and they couldn't get out, and they couldn't get visas, and it was a saga. It was like a 5 or 6 year saga, and you know, we wouldn't let Jews in here.
We turned away a ship with 20,000.
Yeah, yeah, and so you know that was like kind of a scandalous in retrospect, but at mm-hmm. the time, anyway, it's all very familiar. So the article, the grandmother is the mother of Jareb, what's his name? Kushner, Ivanka Trump's husband. It's his grandmother. That blew me away.
Jared Kushner's grandmother?
Is this woman that I just read about in The Nation, I don't know if it's this week or last week, as a refugee trying to get out of Germany, Poland, I think. They were mm-hmm. Polish, trying to get out of Poland. It's making, you know, me have shivers to realize that is his connection, that is his heritage. What is he doing? You know, and that... I don't have any explanation for that, but anyway.
Well, you know what some people say about him is that he is mitigating the effect of his father-in-law.
Yeah, maybe. I don't really know. I'm just saying.
Yeah, that's just what I've been told by people who are a little bit closer than
but as a classic refugee story. That is a classic refugee story. And now from this distance, I mean, you know, the Jews run the banks and they've made America, they're part of what's the fabric of America. But then we wouldn't let them in. You know what I mean? And here we are doing the same thing again. You know, is there anyone in this room, is there anyone listening who doesn't have a story about parents coming over through Ellis Island or getting away from pogroms or whatever? I mean,
absolutely.
We're all immigrants. So so it seemed really poignant for somehow mm-hmm. reason, that story. And the refugee event, you know, what we did, it was very practical. We bought sheets and stuff like that because when they come here, they get a certain amount of money, but they don't get a life. And so we bought some stuff like that, little packages for everybody, and that was one of the main things that we were able to do with the money. And so that was a great feel-good mm-hmm. night. It was a feel-good night. And then coming up is a strawberry tasting event, which is you can look on our website about it. We're inviting children, and you have to bring, if you're an adult, you have to come with a child. And it's going to be strawberry tasting and learning about plants and hopefully chocolate-dipped strawberries. I mean, I'm not going if they don't have chocolate-dipped strawberries.
You like chocolate-dipped strawberries. I will remember that. Okay, and I'm trying to look it up here for when it's taking place.
When the date is. It's June something.
It's in June. Okay. Let's see. We will get there momentarily. There's May. Come on, tell us.
And it's in on the way to Sonoma. It's Flatbed Farm, which she's a fairly new farmer, so it'll be really fun to go to her farm. Mm-hmm. It's always really fun to go to the farms. Mm-hmm. I love going to the farms. It just totally takes you into another little world, and so it'll be really fun to do this. And we'll have a couple of chefs making strawberry crepes or strawberry whatever. So
I'm a big fan of. Pulling off the stem and eating it. But, you know, the other thing that's really good and not, you know, I'm sort of glad that I guess it hasn't caught on because it's sort of mine. I cut a strawberry lengthwise into maybe 3 pieces unless it's really big and then I'll cut it into 4. I just toss it with a little bit of sugar and let it sit. Mm-hmm. And how people ask, how do you get that juice out of strawberries? Sprinkle it with sugar and leave it alone. Pop it in the oven for 10 to 12 minutes.
Yeah.
Add a bunch of black pepper.
Oh, that I've
And
never
you've
done.
Got roasted, I'll make it for you sometime. Yeah. Roasted strawberries. And at that point, you can eat them just like that.
Uh-huh.
Or you can put gelato on top of them. Or you can spoon it over any kind of ice cream that you think will go.
Uh-huh.
I served it out at the Bird's dinner. Tracy of Cookie Take a Bite.
Uh-huh.
She made us the most beautiful bird-shaped cookies.
Uh-huh.
She did two kinds. So we had these black bird-shaped cookies, and then I made coffee granita. And coffee granita is the lightest of all of the frozen desserts.
Uh-huh.
And all it is steeped coffee, sugar, and I put in a little bit of vanilla, and you put it in like a metal or a glass tray, and you don't have to use a churner or anything. You just put it in the freezer, and then every 30 or 40 minutes, you fluff it with a fork. You break it up and fluff it. So you get this a lot of loft, and you just get a nice big scoop and you put it. So it's my version of coffee for dessert. I don't know why people want to drink a bunch of wine and then drink coffee, but it was sort of my version of that. And we just had these beautiful cookies and the roasted strawberries and then the coffee granita. It's a really great dessert.
It sounds really luxurious.
It's luxurious, but not rich.
I don't like
whipped cream. I don't like all that richness.
It's
just really bright and pristine on the palate.
Well,
so that's taking place in June. And what's the cost?
And it's on the website.
What's the cost? Do we know?
$15, $14, less than 20.
Okay, less than 20. And
I think the kids pay and the adults are free, something like that. Something quirky like that.
Mm-hmm. And then
strawberries remind me of English countryside, English country dancing. Don't they remind you of that? Spring in England. That's what strawberries remind me of. There's a Roman Polanski movie where they do English country dancing. All the girls are in white and they have little flowers in their hair and there's strawberries on the table.
What movie?
I think it's Tess.
Oh, Tess of the D'Urbervilles. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I got so
anyway, very romantic.
I was so mad in the beginning of that movie that I've forgotten some of the details, but I'll have to watch it again. Well, they left out the most important part. I don't blame Polanski. I blame his editor. They cut out the part that set up Tessa's motivation for everything else that follows. She accidentally kills the family horse by falling asleep when she's taking the milk, I think. And that's the reason that she goes to live with this guy that they say is their cousin. Anyway, nothing made sense. So I'll have to watch it again and look for that part. But Tessa the D'Urbervilles was certainly so gorgeous. On that note, we have all this music lined up, and you know, with Paula, she doesn't think on her feet. She thinks faster than almost anyone on her feet or otherwise.
Because you gave me whatever this is. <says. laughs>
Absinthe is the aphrodisiac of the self. The green fairy who lives in the absinthe. Wants your soul.
Ah, that was The Damned with Absinthe. And it's anything but damned, I'll tell you. So we've got, we're trying to find the date on the website. It's being cranky. It won't show us anything but May. But we'll try to get it. And if not, you can always send me an email. And I will also post it on Mouthful's Facebook page and on MichelleAnnandJordan.com.
It should go on there. It just isn't there yet. But it should go on there. Uh-huh. I mean, it's time. It's going to happen in June. But so look, keep looking if you don't see it, because it should go on.
Okay, here we go. Children's Strawberry Feast Forever, June 17th. Oh, here's really good news about it. It is at starts at 9:30 before it gets hot. 9:30 to 12:30. It is at 13450 Sonoma Highway in also Highway 12 in Glen Ellen. There will be, you will explore local strawberries. There'll be lots of activities for kids. And let's see what happens when we click on find out more. Here we go. Do they say how much it costs? Okay, here. Oh, some great pictures. Delicious bites, kids comparative tasting, strawberry games, educational activities. It doesn't say the cost. You have to tell them to fix this, Paula.
Okay, well,
you have to go to Brown Paper Tickets to find out how much it will cost. And the link right now, the link is not working. But Paula says it's under $20. So you can put that on your calendar, June 17th. So, and Anthony's going to take a look, see if he can get it to do it. So we have another event coming up.
Yes. Let's see. I think we're going to have an apple farmer's dinner in order to, we just got a grant from a couple months ago from, I think, Community Foundation for $1,000. So we thought, okay, let's have the apple farmers to dinner and talk about their story, how what it's been like to be an apple farmer in mm-hmm. Sonoma County. And we thought we'd honor Ken Ratzlaff because he's just sold.
Oh, he did?
He sold it. Or anyway, he's not running it anymore.
Okay.
So we honor him as being one of the grandfathers. And Kozlowski's trying to sell, so maybe Perry. We haven't totally thought it out yet.
I saw that Kozlowski property is for sale. Yes. Yeah. Oh, gosh. Yeah. And then there's Stan DeVito.
And there's Stan. So there's quite this collection of really interesting and beautiful and fabulous apple farmers. So we thought we'd honor the apple farmers. Gay LeBaron is going to be our master of ceremonies.
Excellent.
Which I'm really excited about that because she has such a long history and knowledge.
Who's going to cook?
About apple farmers. We're going to just do it at the Union Hotel so they can, they can cook.
There you go.
You know, to schlep tables or dishes or any of that.
Exactly.
Let them cook.
And, you know, they have their apple fritters for dessert.
Yes, they have apple fritters for dessert. And we had a dinner with the farmers there one time in the past. It's a nice little venue. I like going out to the Union Hotel. So it'll be open to the public. You'll be able to, farmers will be a sliding scale. The apple farmers will be free, and then any other farmers will be a sliding scale. I think $20 or something. And then the general public, if you have any other kind of job besides farming, I think it's $40 or $45. And we have not put this on the website yet.
Do we know
the date? Is going to be June 14th, maybe June 29th. I can't remember for sure.
Before the apple harvest start.
Yes, before apple harvest starts. We wanted it to do late June before that, because July it'll start to amp up for the apple farmers, and then they won't be able to
do anything. Yeah.
But to be in the same room with some of these guys, I mean, I love these guys.
Lee Walker, they're fabulous.
John Colling, I mean, they're great guys.
Yeah,
and there's the whole new world of cider, which is.
Right.
You know, there's a dozen at this point.
And they're putting in new apple trees.
Yeah.
New varieties.
So there's a whole, renaissance, emergence, transformation going on. So it'll be interesting. Dave Hale would be interesting to have because he's been doing it forever. He's up there on the highway.
Right. And he's still got Hale Apple Farm.
So it'll be really, I think it'll be really inspiring and fun night to come out for. And that's going to be at the Union Hotel sometime in June. I think it's the 19th, but ask me to depend on my memory.
Later in the month, the better.
Yeah. So that's the next thing coming up. And then Apple becomes into Apple World. The Apple harvest is Gravenstein's is coming. Yeah, so it'll amp up that way.
And then that, it seems to me, the way the Slow Food chooses the date and amps up celebrating the Gravenstein apple leads right into the Gravenstein Apple Fair, mm-hmm. which is on August 13th. 11th and 12th this
weekend. Yeah,
it's, yeah, August 11th and 12th. I'm going to be more involved than I've been before.
Are you? Good.
Yeah, well, I'm going to do, I'll certainly do a cooking demonstration, which I've done for the last several years.
Yeah.
But then, I don't know if you went into the, they have that special, they call it VIP area. You have to pay a little bit extra to go in. And one of the things that's really fabulous about it is if it's really hot, it's inside of an oak grove.
Uh-huh.
So it's very cool. And they have a number of people that are giving away either sips or bites.
Uh-huh.
So I agreed to do some sort of food.
Uh-huh.
I'll do something from one of my more recent books that has something to do with apples.
Great. It's turned into a really nice event, the
Fair. Under Carmen Snyder, I mean, I just
executive
she's
done
director,
really great.
And then Samantha, whose name, last name, I'm
can't
forgetting
remember
at
either.
The moment.
Yeah.
She was on a couple of weeks ago on Mouthful, program manager.
Uh-huh.
Between the two of them, they have such fabulous energy.
Uh-huh.
And they've just breathed fabulous new life into the event.
Into Farm Trails, yeah. I mean, when I lived in San Francisco in the 70s, we used to come to Sonoma County to go on the farm trails. And so here they are still.
Yeah.
You know, we used to come here and buy milk and cheese and a lot of nursery. There were a lot of nurseries in those days.
Farm Trails began in 1973.
Yeah.
I moved here in 1972. I got my first map in 73, and I've been at it ever since. I'm a member now for the first time.
Oh, really?
So the new guide is available. You'll start seeing it for free all over the new map and guide, and it's beautiful.
Yeah.
So I'm in there for the first time.
We are really lucky. I mean, look where we live. Come on. Yes. Does it get any better than this?
If we get any better than this, it is here.
Allons enfants de la patrie, le jour de gloire est arrivé. Contre nous de la tyrannie, l'étendard sanglant est levé. L'étendard sanglant est levé. Ces féroces soldats, ils viennent jusque dans nos bras, égorger nos fils, nos compagnes. Aux armes, citoyens, formez vos bataillons, marchons, marchons, qu'un sang impur abreuve nos sillons. Aux armes, citoyens, formez vos bataillons,
sacrés de la patrie conduisent, soutiennent aux braves vengeurs. Liberté, liberté chérie, qu'on bosse avec des défenseurs, qu'on bosse avec des défenseurs sous nos drapeaux, que la victoire.
That, of course, the inimitable Edith Piaf. Gotta love her. Je ne veux pas rien. Okay, Paula.
Okay, so then the Grav Fair. So then the big sort of star of Slow Food Russian River Apple Corps right now is the Community Apple Press, which a lot of people have used, and if you haven't, it's available to you from August through October. And it's a free press where you can bring your apples from your backyard or apples that you buy from farmers and make apple juice out of them. And we're up at Luther Burbank Experiment Farm, so you just have to go on our website and sign up for a time and bring your apples and come.
And you probably can't sign up yet for this.
Not yet. I don't think it's up yet. So that's a great, that is a very inspiring, fun thing to do. And you save a lot of your apples that way. You make juice out of them. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we're thinking about raising money for, and we haven't totally landed on exactly how, is to bring school kids to the press. We've done some of that last year. You know, we got somebody to buy it, pay for the bus and pay for the apples, and then we brought some low-income school kids, and that was a lot of fun too. That's mm-hmm. And if you're a teacher that interests you for your class, you should definitely you know, email the website and let me know so we can put you mm-hmm. on the list, because it's the kids love it, and it's so interesting because they work, right? You know, they do the press, and there are some kids who actually eventually everybody gets kind of sick of it, but there'll be three or four or two or one or at least a couple of kids who are like the workers, right?
Right,
they're right there
they
to the end. They it. Love to work. And so if you're the parent of one of those, you can go, yes. And if you could get your kids to work at home the way they work at the Apple Press in general, you would be happy about that. I mean, they're totally focused. They're into it. It's really very heartwarming to see.
Yeah, it is. And once you see a kid who maybe isn't necessarily the hardworking type of kid, yeah. Once you see them focus on something and work hard, it's really quite astonishing.
It is.
Gives you hope for the future.
Yeah, it is.
Hope good, maybe they'll be able to support themselves. Now, one thing I'm curious about, it seems with the programs that I've seen Slow Food Russian River do in the last few years, it's sort of opening up slow food. It has, in part, a lot of people have complained about seeming very sort of elitist and for foodies and white people who have a lot of time on their hands has been an element of at least the domestic version of slow food. I'm not saying anything about the internet, other ones, but here in California, certainly. Who can join? Who should join?
Well, you know, it's kind of an interesting conversation that's going on in the organization right now, because they're thinking about abandoning the whole concept of becoming members and paying membership just in order to become inclusive so that everybody mm-hmm. can be part of if they mm-hmm. want. Because this, like, they just had a, they're still doing membership and paying for membership. They just had a day where you could pay whatever you want. If you had $5, you could pay it and become a member. But they're moving toward, as an organization in the United States, moving toward a no membership
That's a
concept.
Really good idea.
Yeah. So there's, you know, there's a meetings and all that about that that are still going on about that decision. And then it's the concept is maybe intellectual for people. I don't know. Maybe that's why it's elitist. I haven't been able to figure this part out. But
I think it has just more to do with people with time in their hands, high membership fee, and then giving lip service to a lot of ideas and having expensive dinners.
Yeah.
I think that has been
the expensive dinners is a problem.
Yeah,
for sure.
And yeah. I was reading something in, I think, the winter issue of the magazine
Edible
uh-huh. that had they have the Escoffier questionnaire
uh-huh.
and this is a guy, I'm not going to remember his name, but it was the winter issue. It was at the farmer's market today, and he worked at French Laundry for a long time
uh-huh.
and he
oh,
now
yeah.
lives in or near Santa Rosa, and he asked what was his favorite meal as a child, and I was really astonished. He said Happy Meals at McDonald's
uh-huh.
and like, there's the reason for slow food.
There's the reason for slow food. Well, that's why Carlo started it.
Because yes,
of
exactly.
The slow food that went in, I mean, at McDonald's that went in at the bottom of the Spanish steps. He just
exactly.
went, oh my God.
Yeah. And, you know, like, I've never eaten at McDonald's. And I've never eaten at McDonald's, not because I'm a snob or anything, but, you know, I learned I couldn't get what I wanted there. You know, it's like I couldn't get a very rare burger with nothing on it but dill pickles. And when I was 7 or 8 years old,
lady,
and someone
you're
asked
not getting
me,
that, yeah.
you know, it's like, well, they don't do that. You have no. Well, then I don't want it. But it's like that to make that like to make that someone's guilty pleasure, to make that someone's most cherished childhood meal is
uh-huh.
really sad to me.
Uh-huh.
And so I can see it in the United States. I could see it, you know, having a message that uh-huh. number one, food shouldn't be fast. It should be slow.
Yeah.
And there's a number of reasons it should be slow.
Yeah. And you can cook. I mean, I always cook. And, you know, I can cook in 10 minutes. You
exactly.
know what
you
I mean? It's just real food. And
10
it's,
or 15
you know,
minutes, you can
yeah,
have an easy dinner
yeah,
on the
yeah,
table.
Easy, yeah.
But that still doesn't mean that it's fast. I mean, I figure
right.
you should be able to have dinner on the menu, on the table, within the time it takes to boil water plus 5 minutes.
Right, right.
Because you often have to boil water.
Yeah, yeah. If you eat real food and it's fresh and good, you don't have to hardly do anything to it except cook it up a little bit.
Yeah.
I have a good McDonald's story. My dad, McDonald's, this is my favorite dad story. My dad is a comical figure. Okay, so he cooked for a living and was a bartender. And we're from the East Coast.
I'm from Rhode Island,
right. And he used to do clam bakes, and I don't know if anybody ever had those.
I think not as kids, but we're learning about them. We've learned about them in the
last
decade.
Well, they were really big at Rod and Gun Clubs. Anyway, we would go, and then he would bartend in the wintertime. So, okay. So McDonald's came to town, right? The last dairy farmer, the farm went, and it was on a corner, four corners, and they put it in a big road, and so McDonald's came, right? And so my dad said, okay, I'm going to take you. Well, we were really excited, and we went in there, and we ate it, and we came outside, and my dad said, that was crap. That was the end of my McDonald's
yeah.
career. I've never been back.
Yeah, there's absolutely no reason to go, and I find it sort of sad that so many people, including the person who is currently occupying the White House, that's their idea of the best food
of
in the world.
Best food. Well, there's something about it. I don't know. I mean, I can see why people
really
do it. Yeah,
I can't see it.
Well, I don't know. Let's talk about slow food.
I mean,
I have
lightness.
To think, and I don't know if I can.
Okay.
So anyway, the Community Apple Press is for all of you. If you're a teacher, it's for your kids. Bring people, bring your kids, bring your family. Come
bring
and press
the apples
apple juice.
Off that tree in your backyard.
Yeah, it's really very inspiring and beautiful. And it's Luther Burbank Farm, so there's that historic connection, mm-hmm. In Sebastopol.
Yeah, we don't have that much time
okay,
left.
Okay, I want to talk briefly about meat then. I want to go to meat.
Okay.
Okay, so one of the things that we've been thinking about doing and actually are working on doing, and it has to do with people... not it being an elitist thing, slow food, is we're going to have Honor the Whole Animal event at the fairgrounds at the new Sara Lee Kunde Barn, which is beautiful. Mm-hmm. Have you seen it?
I haven't.
And it's going to be the local meat producers, local cheese producers, local milk producers, local fiber producers, everything about animals. And it's going to be free and open to the public. And October 14th is the date.
Okay.
And we haven't put anything on the website yet.
Okay. What do you want me to do?
I want you to come and, make meatballs is actually what I want you to do and sell books. At least that. And I haven't thought it further in it yet. But the idea is to eat local meat. I mean, commercial meat is horrible.
Yes.
You should never eat it.
Yeah.
And so that's the idea of you can eat. I mean, it's not cheap, local meat. And the reasons people will tell people why it's not cheap. I mean, they got to take the animals up to Chico. There's no local processing. They got to stay all day or go back the next day. And then they got to take them over here to be wrapped and cut. And they have to freeze and put them in a refrigerator over there. It's like, how do they even earn 5 cents, right?
Yeah.
So that will be part of it, the education of, mm-hmm. What it is that's going on with meat locally and how it really needs additional... support in order to survive. Mm-hmm. Otherwise,
well, I could
won't
do
survive.
Two things for you. I could do meatballs with a local meatball.
Uh-huh.
I mean, with local meat.
Yeah.
But then I could also, and perhaps I shouldn't make this offer because every time I talk about this, then I can't get what I want anymore. But one of the big questions that I'm getting at the class I'm teaching through Ollie about 19th, 20th, and 21st century agriculture in Sonoma County. But it's a question I get in a lot of places is, why have organ meats disappeared? And if we're celebrating the whole animal, that's something we really have to address. And I make the most fabulous potato and lamb's tongue salad. I served that at the Bird's Dinner. That was the bed for roasted rack of lamb and roasted asparagus, and everything was all tied together with an Italian salsa verde. But people in general are afraid of organ meats, and that's been something that's been happening since the 1950s. And if you're going to honor the whole animal, that is something that you need to incorporate. I think it's fine if you don't like the taste of something. For example, I really don't like the taste or texture of brains, but a lot of people do.
Yeah.
If you don't like if you actually don't like something, I have no problem. But if you reject it because, ooh, tongue, I'm not going to eat anything that's tasting me back, that's just an insult to the whole animal.
Uh-huh.
So I think that we really need education in that arena, and it's something that people in their 70s and 80s remember. And if you look back in cookbooks in the early part of the 20th century up through the 40s, uh-huh. you see organ meats,
uh-huh.
and you see lots of recipes for them, and they're
uh-huh.
quite good.
Uh-huh.
So that sounds like a great event. It
uh-huh.
sounds like a really wonderful event. We only have a couple minutes left,
okay.
and there was one thing I wanted to delve into, and you only touched on it a tiny bit in a joking way, but I'm wondering about that connection that you have to farmers and understanding them. You lived in Oregon for quite a while.
I did.
Did your experiences there, you were living pretty close to the land, weren't you?
Yeah, we did. We did a back to the land thing. I don't know. I credit it with my childhood. I mean, I was raised in peach and apple orchards in Rhode Island, and we were the first sort of subdivision thing that came in, the cheap two-bedroom subdivision houses. We moved in, for
$8,000
or $9,000.
How many siblings?
Just my sister and I.
Okay, you and Barbara, Ian.
Yeah, yeah. And we, that's where I grew, had my childhood. Dugan had a cow in his front yard, and it was very rural, and my father grew a garden, his father grew a garden. We had a guy. The pig farmer came and picked up our garbage for his pigs. We had a farm truck that came during the summertime. Mm-hmm. And it was just, that's the heritage that I come from. Mm-hmm. And so I have that connection to those people. And
okay.
so,
okay, so know, it does go all to, the, I've always wondered if it was your time in Oregon, but it does go back to your
It has Oregon connection too, but I give credit to my my heritage, my growing up. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
In our last minute and a half or so, as people start to go to the farmer's market, those who don't go during the down season, what advice do you have for them?
As people who do what?
Who start to, who are thinking, oh, I better start going back to the farmer's market now. There's lots of things.
Bring a lot of bags. Get to know the farmers. Those would be my two things.
Talk to farmers.
Yeah, get to know them. They really make you feel good. And what they're doing is unbelievably respectable. Just even growing a few tomato plants, and then they have this, and they have it every week, and it changes with the season. And it's like, oh my God, how can you do that? I couldn't possibly do that. I have it. Get those feeling connections with the farmers.
Thank you. So it's been Paula Downing for the full hour. Thank you so much, Paula. You are, even though I rarely ever use the word hero, it's so overused. you are mine.
Thank you, dear.
And be sure to tune in next week when we will have another yummy episode of Mouthful Smart Talk about food, wine, and farming here on KRCV. And instead of going out with our usual song, we're paying one last tribute to France with a fabulous cover of Purple Haze.
J'embrasse le ciel. Je te sors sur moi.